know what time it is? It's time to ball about the South with C. Wood. Ball about the South, coming at you from a Southern perspective on the NFL, NBA, HBCU, and of course, some of the best talk and analysis on the SEC. Real sports talk, real Southern flavor. Follow me and the show at C. Wood on Sports on X and IG. And now, it's time to ball about the South. What's good? What's good? It's C. Wood, and yes, it is the latest, greatest episode of Ball About the South with C. Wood. Definitely appreciate you coming by to check me out one more time. This is episode 54, which we keep moving on here with my little podcast, and I definitely appreciate you taking a little bit of time out of your busy schedule to check me out. Man, I really do appreciate it. Let's not waste any time right now. We got a lot to talk about in this episode. Obviously, college football season moves on. We're going to obviously go back and talk about week 5. We're going to go ahead, obviously, and talk week 6. A lot of really interesting matchups coming up week 6, especially in the SEC. We're getting into all of that. We'll go back and look at some of those big matchups from this past weekend. We'll do the same with the NFL, week 4 last weekend, of course, week 5 coming up this week. We have week 5. It is the first weekend in the NFL where we will have bye weeks. So we'll talk about some of that. Got the Jacksonville Jaguars playing their second consecutive game across the pond, which is pretty crazy. I did not know that until a little while back when I looked at the schedule, and I was like, whoa. I didn't think it was incorrect, and obviously it's nice. Jacksonville will be back over there for the second consecutive weekend. Successful first time as they go out and beat the Falcons last Sunday morning. Pretty easily, as a matter of fact. The Jaguars, maybe things are starting to get right in Duval. We'll talk a little bit more about that a little bit later. We'll talk the Tennessee Titans. After amassing 94 yards total offense, against the Cleveland Browns in Cleveland just 2 Sundays ago and scoring 3 points, they lose that game 27-3. They figured, you know, let's just do things Tennessee Titans style. No one believes in us. Everyone's talking down on us. Everyone's talking down on our quarterback. We're trash. Let's just go on and flip this thing around and we'll beat the other team from Ohio 27-3. That is exactly what happened in Nashville this past Sunday. We'll talk a little bit deeper about that football game as the Titans. What went right for them in that huge second quarter? We'll talk a little bit deeper about that. And you see the title of this particular episode. It is recognize the formula. And there are a lot of teams, obviously right now, man, we're talking about going into week 6 in college football. We're talking about going to week 5 in the NFL. It's obviously about focusing on what you do right. What is that formula that makes you successful? You should know it right by now. Your team should have identity offensively, defensively. So we'll look at the teams here in the NFL. We'll talk some of the teams in college football as well, as we have some really big matchups, some really interesting matchups coming up in college football, especially around the SEC. We'll talk about that, obviously, in my About the SEC segment here in a little while. Looking forward to that for sure. There are other sports going on in the sports world. It's not just a football thing right now. You got the Major League Baseball playoffs that have started. Unfortunately, one of the teams, really, if you look at it, all three of the teams from my footprint here in the South, the Miami Marlins, the Tampa Bay Rays, and the Atlanta Braves all made the playoffs. only the Atlanta Braves remain. Not a surprise that the Miami Marlins went down to defeat to the Philadelphia Phillies there in the wild card round. But it's pretty surprising, you know, to a degree anyway, that Tampa Bay went down in two games sweep out of three to the Texas Rangers. Tampa Bay was one of the top, obviously one of the top records in the game all year long. You sit there and you look at it, you had the Braves, you had the Dodgers, you obviously had the Baltimore Orioles, were really the top three teams. Tampa Bay was right in behind them. And they laid a humongous egg, which is not necessarily uncommon for them to do. I mean, playing in the stadium, the Trop. I guess they still call it the Trop, Tropicana Field. I'm not even really sure what they call that place. I know that there's some talk about them building a new stadium down in that area. But for whatever reason, they have not played. They've done okay in playoff games, don't get me wrong. Obviously, they've been to the World Series and all of that, but probably not as good as they need to be, or it's like you should be at home. And Tampa Bay goes down in two games, man. Did not even win a game in the wild card series, so their season is over. The Miami Marlins season is over. They went down to the Philadelphia Phillies, but they're, like I said, there was really no surprise in that one. And so the Atlanta Braves, they obviously were waiting in the wings as they had the best record in baseball. They will sit and get the Philadelphia Phillies in the NLDS. The Dodgers will play the Diamondbacks, who surprised the Milwaukee Brewers in two games. They're in Milwaukee. They get the Dodgers coming up in the NLDS. And on the American League side, like I said, you have the Baltimore Orioles getting set to play the Texas Rangers. And then on the other side of it, you have the Minnesota Twins, who are set to play the Houston Astros. Interesting stuff, to say the absolute least. And should be an interesting NLDS, NLCS, and hopefully World Series going forward. Looking forward to the baseball playoffs. And it's pretty amazing that all of the wild card series ended up in two game sweeps. I just want to throw that in there as well. And obviously, we also have playoffs going on in the WNBA. We are in the WNBA finals round now, coming up starting this Sunday, when the New York Liberty faced the Las Vegas Aces. The Liberty had all they could handle from the Kinetic Sun, even though they won that series 3-1. They were all tight games. The Kinetic Sun took the first game, but the Liberty prevailed in the next three games. So they move on, and then the Aces, they deal away with the Dallas Wings in the semifinal round. So this is the matchup that everyone was anticipating before the season started, I believe. And now we got it. Should be a very interesting series. The Liberty had a lot of success against the Aces this season. I think a lot of that was because of their advantage on the boards. I mean, their second chance points, things of that nature, are a huge advantage for the Liberty. So we'll see if the Aces have some of that straightened out. Part of the reason they had that advantage was the absence of Candace Parker from the Aces. But obviously that is not going to be able to be repaired right now, Candace Parker still remains out. But we'll see what the Aces can do on the board. It's going to be interesting to see. Should be a very, very good series. Hopefully, it'll be a series that goes to distance. I'm an Aces fan, but I'm also a fan of the WNBA, and I definitely want it to be the best that it can possibly be. We just got to get more eyes on the sport, more people to be involved with it, more people to be interested in it. And I would say one way to do that is definitely have a really good series with arguably the two best teams in the league doing their thing. So hopefully there'll be a lot of eyeballs, a lot of interest in the WNBA Finals, as you have the new MVP obviously involved in it, Breanna Stewart. She takes the reign away from Asia Wilson, who won it last season. That should be interesting, because Asia Wilson may have a little bit of a chip on her shoulder. She ended up finishing third not only did she lose out to Stewie, but she ended up finishing third in the balloting. Alyssa Thomas ended up second, from the Connecticut Sun. So, going to be interesting to see how this thing plays out. Really looking forward to that series. Let's get a little bit of football in before we go kind of to our first break, man. And the biggest game last weekend in the NFL was that other team in the South. The team here in the South that does not play in the NFC or AFC South, and that is, of course, the Miami Dolphins. They went down hard. 48-20 there in the AFC East battle with the Buffalo Bills there in Buffalo, New York. And that game, man, kind of threw me a little bit. I was not surprised at all. I picked Buffalo to win that football game here on the show last week, so I'm not surprised at that. But I was definitely surprised that Buffalo was able to win it so easily, putting up 31 points in that second, in the first half, and basically cruising from there. Dolphins offense kind of got stuck in neutral there in the second half. I really thought, even though it was, 31-14 at the half, I really thought that the Dolphins were at least going to make this thing close, possibly make it a one-score game, something like that, make it one of the better finishes of the season. But that did not even come close to happening. Not close. And again, Buffalo, talked about it last week, Buffalo has really been playing with a chip on their shoulder these last 3 weeks. After they lost that first game of the season to the New York Jets, they have come back. And they are absolutely doing their thing. They put it completely on the Raiders week 2, 38-10. They put up 37 points? I think it was 37-0. I can't remember the exact score, but no, something like that against the Commanders in week 3. And then obviously come back and do the same thing to the Dolphins. Very impressive what Josh Allen and crew are doing. Yeah, Stephon Diggs doing his thing. Buffalo Bills playing really good defensive football as well. Giving up 20 points, no shame in giving up 20 points to this Dolphins club. Yeah, man, the Buffalo Bills look prime to maybe make me wrong. I picked the Dolphins to win the AFC East to start the season. Maybe the Buffalo Bills are going to be up for the challenge. We'll see how it goes. Should be a very interesting race there between those two teams. But like I said last week, I'm not going to say that the Dolphins had a really big time different mindset going into this game than Buffalo did, but I definitely think this game was more important for the Bills. You just did not want to lose that game. You had already lost the game in the division, mind you, and then you lost that game. If you had sat there and come back and lost again this past Sunday at home, then you'd have been looking at two division losses and then having to go to Miami to, you know, later in the season to try to even it up against the Dolphins. So this is a game the Bills, I think, needed more than the Dolphins needed. The Dolphins can sitting there still 3-1 right now, still in good, very good shape. And I think that they can kind of look forward to handling business when Bills return the trip to Miami. You know, return that trip to South Beach later in the season. Biggest game I saw. I figured this game was going to be the biggest game, at least on the SEC schedule, maybe in the nation. The LSU Tigers at Ole Miss, and it did not disappoint one single bit. The Ole Miss Rebels, man. Lane Kiffin doing this thing, getting that late touchdown with about 39 seconds to go in the game. They beat the LSU Tigers 55-49. Defense optional. Actually, it's almost like defense rejected. It's like, nah, just leave your defense at the house. Just bring your offense as you are. Come as you are as your offense. Do not bring your defense. We do not want to see it. That's what we had last weekend at the Grove, 55-49. The Rebels win it. They go to 4-1 on the season. Obviously, their only loss in the, their only loss period was to Alabama. So they have that one loss in the SEC. Pretty bad loss for the LSU Tigers. That is their second loss. Now it's their first loss within the conference. So, I mean, look, man, you know, things can still shake out for LSU to win the SEC West, possibly get back to the SEC Championship game and all of that. That is not gone at all. But there's a lot of talk of people talking about whether or not their national championship or their college football playoff hopes are gone. Obviously, they took a huge hit. But I think, you know, there's a lot of parity in college football right now. I think you sit there and you look at a Pac-12 that is absolutely stacked. I think you look at this SEC that has a lot of good teams in it, but if one team can kind of slip out and challenge Georgia or beat Georgia, I still think even with two losses, I mean, they need a lot of help. I mean, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. LSU would need a ton of help. But they lost their game. I mean, they pretty hard now. They lost it pretty good to Florida State. But Florida State could be in the playoff themselves. I mean, are you going to punish if LSU has as good or a better resume than a team with one loss? And if they have two losses and they run the table from now on and won the SEC championship, are you going to punish them for losing to Florida State? You going to punish them for losing a 6-point game at Ole Miss? I think Ole Miss is going to be a team that could possibly qualify for a New Year's Six Bowl, if nothing else. I mean, Ole Miss still has a lot of life in them to win the SEC, or the SEC West anyway. So that dream is not gone either. So I'm just saying, it's going to take a lot. They're going to need a lot of help. Don't get me wrong, but I would not say that it's over for LSU. It would not shock me at all this season if we have a two-loss team in the college football playoff. We'll see how it goes. It's going to be interesting to see. Anyway, man, so we'll talk maybe a little bit deeper about that game. Crazy game there at the Grove. Obviously, we're going to do a lot of SEC talk when we go about the SEC in a little bit, talk more NFL, all of that. The NBA, like I said, we got the NBA tipping things off. They had their media day with coaches, players, and all that the other day. We got a couple sound bites from that, a couple interesting things with teams here in my neck of the woods. Got a lot to talk about, just like I said. We're going to get into all of that, man. You're listening to Ball About the South, the Seawood. Y'all, we're back in. Ball About the South continues, and we're going to get into probably my favorite segment of the show. It is our time to go about the SEC. Sir, yes, sir. You know what that sound means. Let's get into the SEC here. We'll look back at last week. Look ahead to what we have going on this week. Again, really interesting games coming up this coming Saturday afternoon and evening in the SEC. But let's go back, man. Let's go back to week five. Obviously, we'll start on the Plains. The Georgia Bulldogs, I mean, is there a reason to be concerned with these Bulldogs as they come away with a 27-20 victory over the Auburn Tigers? We knew that game would be tight. Not surprised at all. I didn't know. The only thing that kind of made me a little bit, worried me a little bit about picking that game was I just didn't know if Auburn could score enough points. I was like, okay, I don't know if Auburn's going to be able to score 10 points. I figured Georgia would score around 20, somewhere in that range, 17-20, something like that, if Auburn defense really showed up and Georgia's offense kind of showed the problems and issues that they've had so far this season. I just didn't, I didn't know if Auburn could get the 10 points. That was the only thing I was like, because I really thought this would be a one-score game right down to the wire, and that's exactly what we got. But Auburn was able to do a little bit better than I thought. Of course, they did have the help of a few Georgia turnovers. Obviously, that was a huge help, as they had a couple turnovers almost like back-to-back there that set up Auburn and deep in Georgia territory. Auburn, for the most part, took advantage of that. They didn't get touchdowns on each time, but they did get at least a field goal each time Georgia turned the ball over. So that kept Auburn in the football game, no doubt. But then the one thing you don't have to be concerned about the Georgia Bulldogs is their tight end position. And Brock Bowers, or whatever you want to say that he really plays. Because, I mean, look, I mean, he plays tight end. Obviously, that is what he is listed as. But this dude does so much more than play tight end. He came to the rescue again for the Georgia Bulldogs. I mean, I just, just an incredible fourth quarter by Brock Bowers. Really, really an incredible game, period. But especially when they needed him, play after play. And then obviously he made that game winning touchdown there with about 2 minutes and a half to go in the game. Just huge, man. And this dude, I tell you, he is really, in my opinion, okay, I think he should be on the Heisman watch list. I think he should be getting more focus, man. I think he should be getting more attention. I just really do. I mean, obviously, he's not going to get it because technically he doesn't touch the ball enough. But I mean, who's more important to their football team right now than Brock Bowers? Name, you know what I'm saying? I mean, obviously there are a lot of really good quarterbacks. You sit there and you look at teams that are still undefeated right now, or teams that are still in the top 10 or whatever. You look at Washington has a really good quarterback in Penix. You have Bo Nix. You have Ewers at Texas. You have all of these quarterbacks. And I would tell you, not one of them is more important to their team than Brock Bowers is important to Georgia. So, I mean, again, obviously these guys are going to touch the ball more than he is. He is going to, you know, the quarterback is going to be the distributor of the offense. I understand all that. And I'm not saying Brock Bowers should win the Heisman. I'm just saying, to me, he should get more attention and, you know, some notoriety and say, look, man, maybe this dude at least deserves to be on the ballot. Maybe he deserves to be in the conversation as the nation's best football player, period. Forget about tight end. Forget about skill player. Maybe the nation's best player. And he definitely showed that Saturday afternoon on the plains as Georgia wins that game. But I tell you what, if you can find some kind of way, just, you know, not stop Brock Bowers. I mean, you're not going to stop him. If you can find a way to, you know, kind of slow him down. I mean, I know that Georgia has other guys. I mean, they got McConkey back the other day, one of their veteran wide receivers. They have a couple other really good receivers there. Don't get me wrong. This is not about, it, you know, a team that's just about Brock Bowers. I don't want to sit there and say that. But if you can kind of make Brock Bowers work a little harder, or, you know, if he catches the ball, you don't give up the yards after catch, things of that nature. Is there someone else that will really step up and take the lead? Will Carson Beck be as comfortable as he is with Brock Bowers throwing to someone else? I think that's a question to ask. And then I think you sit there and you look at his defense. They, you know, obviously you sit there, you had the Peyton Thorne, he had the long run there in the first quarter to set up, I think it was the field goal drive there early in the game. I think it was, what, 50, 60 yards or whatever it was. Auburn went over 200 yards. Now, again, Auburn cannot throw the ball at all. I mean, Auburn's averaging seriously like around 80 or 90 yards passing right now per game, which is insane, or at least in the games that they played against SEC foes, and you throw the Cal game, basically FBS level competition. Auburn's been horrible throwing the football, but they were able to run pretty well. I mean, they got some things done on the ground against this Georgia defense, despite not being able to throw the football. So, again, I just wanted to know, do you think there's some concern about that with the Bulldogs? Obviously, while we're talking about recognizing the formula right now is to find Brock Bowers. And the formula to beat Georgia is to find some way to kind of slow him down. Good luck with that. But that is the formula. So, huge win for Georgia. They move. If they continue to be undefeated in the SEC, I think that's, 23 consecutive games they've won in the SEC or something like that. I'm not sure exactly, but it doesn't really matter what it is. They continue to be undefeated another week. Look at the game in Lexington, Kentucky. And I foolishly picked the Florida Gators in that football game. And again, look, I thought it was a game that could go back and forth. It was a game I looked at hard. I would not have been surprised whoever won that game. The thing I was surprised at, I did not think Kentucky would win that game as easily as they did the Wildcats. Not threatened at all by Florida all day long there in Lexington. Ray Evans, huge game for him, running back there for the University of Kentucky. Running all over the Florida Gators. The Gators reverting back to everything before the Tennessee game. The Gators looked bad in that game. Kentucky Wildcats continue to be undefeated. And now they look ahead to this big game coming up this Saturday at Georgia. What can the Wildcats do? I mean, here we are again. I mean, this is absolutely nothing new for the Kentucky Wildcats. For the Big Blue. This is nothing new. We've seen this for several seasons. Maybe not last season, but before that, we've seen it for several seasons here. The team coached by Mark Stoops. Can they finally get over the hump? They finally got over the hump against Florida, and now it seems like they can't lose to the Gators. They won three in a row to Florida now. So, can they finally do the same with the Georgia Bulldogs? This is probably their best chance to do it. This is probably it. Unfortunately, the game is between the hedges. So the likelihood that they're going to get it done is not very good. Let's just tell it like it is. So, but I tell you what, I like this defense. I think this is a team that plays to their competition. We've seen it all season. We've questioned what, didn't really know what Kentucky was. I don't know if we really still know what Kentucky is right now, because I think we still question what Florida is. But I do like what I see defensively, if nothing else. And we know that they can run the football. And that is what Auburn did the other day. I mean, again, do I think Kentucky wins that game, though? But I do think they'll keep it closer than they have the last couple of times they've been down there in Athens. Should be an interesting game, man. I like the Georgia Bulldogs to stay undefeated, but it will not, again, surprise me if Kentucky really keeps that game close. Again, we'll see how they do. It took them a long time to get over the hump against Florida. We'll see if this is finally the season for the Kentucky Wildcats to do the same with the Georgia Bulldogs. Another team in the East making a lot of noise, and this is another huge, very intriguing game coming up this week. Tigers versus Tigers. LSU, the Bayou Bengals, making their way to Como. If you don't know what Como is, that's Columbia, Missouri. Because we got two Columbias in the SEC, by the way. You got Columbia, South Carolina, home of the South Carolina Gamecocks, and then you have Columbia, Missouri, MO, home to the Missouri Tigers, Mizzou. The LSU Tigers hit up there, man. They have lost Could the Bayou Bengals be staring down their second SEC loss right now? Because this Missouri team is hot, to say the absolute least. Brady Cook has been doing the thing offensively. This team in Missouri, to me, is much better defensively than Ole Miss is. And again, that game's going to be played in Columbia. Again, I talked about Missouri last week. We talked about them having, you know, kind of a, a trap game there with Vanderbilt last weekend. They handled that well. Because you sit there and you look at it, they were coming off the win against Memphis, obviously the huge win at home against Kansas State. Now, they get LSU this week. They get Kentucky next week. They get South Carolina, Spencer Rattler after that. And then it's their turn to go up against the Georgia Bulldogs. Their turn to go between the hedges. That game, so they came out with flying colors in that game last week against Vanderbilt. What did they do with the LSU Tigers coming to town this weekend? I'm going to be very interested to see that football game. But I tell you what, like I said, man, I don't think LSU can go in with this mentality that they can win a shootout against Missouri, because I don't know if it'll get to be a shootout. I think this Missouri defense is much better than what Ole Miss has shown. And LSU right now is not stopping, at least Saturday. The two games that really mattered and that they lost, they could not stop Florida State in the second half, and they were unable to stop Ole Miss pretty much all game. Missouri stops them like they've been, you know, kind of slowing down other opponents at all. You got to like Missouri's chances of winning that football game there at home. Very intriguing game. That game is going to be 11 o'clock right out of Sports Center or right out of Game Day or whatever coming up this Saturday. Cannot wait for that matchup. Again, very, very intriguing game. And then you got another big game, obviously, in the SEC. As we slide over to the SEC West, you got the Alabama Crimson Tide traveling to Texas A&M. Huge game. The Tide coming off a huge win against Mississippi State. Let's kind of revisit that game first before we talk about going ahead to their trip to Kyle Field in College Station, Texas. Big time win for Alabama, 40-17 over the Mississippi State Bulldogs. Again, this is about, like I said, recognizing the formula. And right now, the formula for Alabama, and there are a lot of Alabama fans that were unhappy, that were complaining this past Saturday night, late Saturday night, because that game didn't kick off till 8 o'clock, about Alabama's, you know, the offensive coordinator, Tommy Reeves, not opening up the offense, vanilla offense, things of that nature. Look, for me, I think Alabama went into it with an attitude like this, especially the way the game started. Alabama kind of started the game kind of shaky, and I think they kind of went into a mindset that, look, we're going to run the football tonight. We're going to run the football, and we're going to throw it when we have to, basically. And we're going to try to get a lead. If we can get a lead like that, we're going to handle it like that for a while. And then we may open it up a little bit in the second half. We're not going to sit here and show our hand to Texas A&M coming up this week. Obviously, there's a lot of film on Alabama right now, and Jalen Milroe, the quarterback, and all of that. So don't get me wrong, but I think Alabama went to it with a mindset like, look, we think we can win this football game without showing a lot on film to Texas A&M. And I think that's exactly what the way they played it. Now, that's not probably going to work against A&M. I'm sorry. That's the way they played it against Mississippi State. I'm sorry. And I don't think that's going to work this coming Saturday against A&M. And I don't think you're going to see the same game plan against A&M. I think you're going to see a team that's going to really try to establish the run, because I think that is the formula right now. They have to run the football. They have to have Jason McClellan and Roydell Williams running the ball well between the tackles, off tackle. They need to have Jalen Milroe involved in the run game the way they did early in the game against Mississippi State. He had the 53-yard touchdown to get things started for Alabama after a slow start. They had a couple bad penalties. They had another muff punt by Kool-Aid. Not sure what's up with that. Some other things that happened to them in those first few minutes of the football game, but Milroe broke off that run, and things kind of calmed down, and Alabama just went out and did what they had to do. I think, again, the formula for Alabama is not only running the football, but playing from playing with the lead, and that's what they did. They got the pick six after that from Braswell. So they went up 14-0. There was no need to open up the offense. I mean, I found it mighty funny that now all of a sudden, Alabama's running the ball pretty well. They're running it on downs that the fan base has always said that Alabama should be running the ball and not throwing. And now you want to open up the offense. You want to open up the offense now. In a game, you really probably don't need to open up the offense. So, I think all in all, man, you sit there and you look defensively. I think besides some runs that Mississippi State was able to get off, which could be a concern. Don't get me wrong. Besides that, I thought Alabama played very well defensively. They ended up getting 3 Mississippi State turnovers. One of those, again, went for a pick six. They did a lot of good stuff defensively, like they've been doing most of the season, really. So, I think really good look there. But I think the run game is probably not a huge concern. That's kind of pointed out by Nick Saban, that really Mississippi State kind of ran the ball a little bit more than he expected them to. So, maybe that's, you kind of chalk it up to that. And then, of course, if you didn't already feel pretty good about Alabama right now, I mean, again, this is a huge contest coming up. We'll talk. I'll give you my pick on this game here later in the show. Obviously, probably the biggest test of the season for Alabama. I understand they played Texas, but this game is at Texas A&M. It's not in Tuscaloosa. So to me, this is the bigger test with Jalen Milroe going on the road. Young defense and all of that. But Nick Saban, man, if you weren't happy with anything else as an Alabama fan, I think you had to be happy with Nick Saban showing to be Nick Saban again, chewing people out on the sideline. And here's why he did it.
I think some moments in the first half where you seemed pretty animated on the sideline. What was behind that for you, and kind of how did you get help?
Well, Miss Terry told me if we're not playing good, to get on their butt. So I just did what I was told.
That was classic by Nick Saban. Saying, look, man, Miss Terry told me to do it. I was just doing what I was told. And every Alabama fan that I know thanks Miss Terry big time, because that is the Nick Saban we've been waiting to see. You know, we've been seeing the much softer Nick Saban the last 2 or 3 seasons. That wasn't the soft Nick Saban we saw the other night there in Stark Vegas. He got that, you know, he went off on Terrion Arnold a couple times that night. He went off on the entire offense there, at the beginning of the game with the penalties that they had. He went off on the defense. He went off on a couple people there in that football game. And everybody that I know that likes the Alabama Crimson Tide love to see every second of it. And we feel like he's back. Whoever that was impersonating Nick Saban has finally gone. And, we have to thank. We have to give it all to Miss Terry for letting him know what he needs to do, man. And we have to thank Nick Saban for listening to his wife. I mean, if there was ever an illustration of why a husband needs to listen to his wife, that was it right there. But, yeah, man, seriously, though, That was the Nick Saban we've been waiting for. And he lit a fire under that football team. Again, it was not pretty. It's not. We've talked about this on the show many times. I've talked to I'm blue in the face on Twitter or X or whatever with other Alabama fans. Look, man, this is a process. It is going to be a week to week. It's going to be going to have to be improvement week to week. Even if Alabama loses this football game, I think Alabama's at a point right now where if they play well, you can. I think you could justify saying that they've had some growth. I'm just talking about this particular team, not necessarily the program, just this team. And again, I just think you have to sit there and look at it that way if you're an Alabama fan. So we'll see what happens. Alabama comes in. I think they came in like a 2.5, 3-point favorite. That thing is down to 1. So a lot of money coming in on the Aggies. A lot of people starting to believe that the Aggies are going to pull off the victory on Saturday evening, Saturday afternoon. I think it's a good thing for Alabama that they get this game in the afternoon instead of at night. I think that kind of makes it a little bit better. Still a very, very tough atmosphere there at Kyle Field in College Station. The Aggies are playing very well defensively. They win their game against Arkansas. They kind of pull away there in the fourth quarter there. Max Johnson doing pretty good. This is a really good defense, and this is going to be a huge test up front for that Alabama offensive line that we've talked about, that everyone's talked about. Can they handle that defensive line, which may be one of the best in the SEC, one of the best in the nation, and unquestionably, in my view, they're up front for the Texas A&M Aggies. I think that Alabama can have some success against their offense. Now, that's not to say that A&M won't have success against Alabama's defense. They have a lot of weapons, starting with Ania Smith and several other guys. But I do think the game is going to be won in the trenches on the other side. I guess I should actually say the game will be won or lost in the trenches on the other side of the football. For me, I think that is the biggest matchup of the game. If Alabama's offensive line can hold up, they'll stand a pretty good chance to come out of Kyle Field with a victory. Again, I think it's going to be a tight game. I'll give you my pick a little bit later on. So, yeah, a lot of good action around the SEC last weekend. And those, like I say, those three games coming up this weekend are huge, man. Missouri at LSU. Whew. Kentucky at Georgia. Alabama at Texas A&M. Those are three of the biggest games in the nation, unquestionably. And they are definitely going to go a long way towards paving the path to the SEC championship game in December. Anyway, man, we're going to take another quick break. It's time to get into the NFL. You listen to the Ball About the South with C. Wood. All right, man, we're back in. We'll continue with Ball About the South. We'll get into the NFL in this segment, but before I end my About the SEC segment, I got to just go back and congratulate the Tennessee Volunteers. They definitely avenged their loss to South Carolina from last season. They win that game 41-20 this past weekend against the Gamecocks. Huge win. And kind of like I said last week, I didn't think there should be much need for motivation for Tennessee. The only motivation they needed to do is kind of look back at the scoreboard from last season. They took it in, and then they did what they had to do. The Volunteers are still absolutely alive in the SEC East, despite their loss a couple weeks ago to the Gators, so we'll see how it goes. But, big-time win for the Tennessee Volunteers. And before I get into the NFL, I definitely want to give a shout-out to this week's SEC, my Players of the Week. I call them my Ballers of the Week. And I say ballers because usually it'll be one player. But I've got to go two in this case, man. With Ole Miss, and obviously, Brock Bowers had to be on this list as well. You know, 14 receptions, I think it was, or for 157 yards. Man, Brock Bowers was ridiculous. Just ridiculous. Let me go back and look and make sure I had that right. I know it was 157 yards. I'm sorry, 14 targets, 8 receptions for Brock Bowers, 157 yards. Huge game for him, but I had to go back to that Ole Miss LSU game. and my, I guess you call them co-ballers of the week in the SEC. Jackson Dart, 26-39, 389 yards, 4 touchdowns. And, of course, their running back, Quinshon Judkins, he had 33 rushes, 177 yards and a touchdown. Both those guys, I just felt like really I couldn't pick between those two guys because I think both of them had equal importance in that game. When Ole Miss needed to run the ball, they could do it. Not to say LSU couldn't. LSU had success running as well, but it just seemed like it was more of an impact when Judkins was able to really run the ball there and kind of keep the Tigers at bay. That was really big. So, yeah, man, I'm gonna go with them as my co-ballers of the week in the SEC. Big time win for Ole Miss. We'll see if they can expand on that going forward. All right, let's get into the NFL. And we came on talking about, just kind of quickly talked about the Tennessee Titans. They lost 27-3 to the Cleveland Browns 2 weeks ago. I mean, how is it, man? And we've seen this thing time and time again with the Tennessee Titans. Just when you think you kind of know what they're about, just when you kind of figure it's okay to dismiss them, they find a way. I mean, obviously, this is not the same Cincinnati Bengals team that I predicted to go to the Super Bowl. I'm not backing down off of that. I absolutely picked them to go to the Super Bowl this year. I still think it's possible, but, you know, three losses in four games, it's not looking good. But they're not looking like the Super Bowl team of a couple years ago or anything like that. But still, the turnaround from losing 27-3 in Cleveland last week, or two Sundays ago, and then coming back this past Sunday and beating the Bengals 27-3, it's just totally insane. You're talking about two completely different ends of the spectrum. And I just, while I was happy to see it this past Sunday, I just don't know what to think about this Titans football team, man. I just really do not. You go back, and obviously the Browns' defense had a lot to do with how bad Tennessee looked in that football game. The Browns have been great defensively for the most part until this past week when they kind of got pushed around a little bit by the Ravens. But, you know, that's no shame in doing that. But, man, it's just crazy how this team does. We've seen it for the last several years. We get people dismiss the Titans. They dismiss Ryan Tannehill. People even dismiss Derrick Henry. And then they come up and they step up and play the game of their lives. It's just absolutely crazy. Defensively, they were fantastic. And then offensively, you look at Tim Kelly, the offensive coordinator. I thought the plan was fantastic. I mean, I thought this is a good defense by the Cincinnati Bengals. Do not get that twisted, especially up front, where the Titans have had issues on the offensive line. This Bengals team was repeatedly in the backfield in that Monday night game against the Rams. I just 8 days ago, 10 days ago, whatever it was. Just crazy, man. But again, recognizing the formula. And it's just like this team, the Titans, don't recognize the formula in certain games and they go away from it. And it shows. The play action game was hidden. Now, obviously, you have to run the ball pretty well. But let's not act like Derrick Henry was just running all over the Bengals early in that game. But you went to him enough. You went to him early and often. Obviously, you threw in Tajay Spears as well. Not Tajay Spears. I'm sorry. I keep getting Tajay Spears mixed up with the Spears, the play of the Titans a few years ago. I don't know how I keep doing that. But anyway, Tajay Spears, you mixed in some runs for him. Obviously, some, you know, screen passes. A lot of Derrick Henry and Tajay Spears in the lineup together, which we've seen a lot of since week one. I kind of like that lineup, actually. Especially when they come up with two tight ends. And, you know, I'm going to talk about these tight ends, especially one here in just a second. But I thought the play calling was spot on this past Sunday. I thought it was excellent. Excellent. It's a bit, to me, it's been some of the best that I've seen in years watching this football team. Play action, that's where it's at. There's, you know, that is where Ryan Tannehill excels. Not only does he excel in it, obviously, when you sit there and you run those play fakes to Derrick Henry, you know what's going to happen. He is going to get all the attention in the world. And you're going to get those safeties and linebackers moving up. And all Ryan Tannehill is just kind of throw behind them to whomever it is. And he did just that. And that was without Treylon Burks the other day. That's really good performance offensively, man. I can't say enough about the game plan. I can't say enough about the execution, especially in the second quarter when the Bengals had no answer for it. And that's what you got to see from now on with this Titans football team. But will we? I don't know. I don't know. They go away from Derrick Henry when they really shouldn't. They go away from the play-action game when they really shouldn't. I just really don't understand some of the play calling and things of that nature with this football team sometimes. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with this team going forward. I still think that this team can get to a point where they can still win the division. Obviously, everybody's 2-2 now. Everyone's 2-2. So, huge game for Tannehill. Nice game for Derrick Henry. What about the jump pass there at the end of the first half? A little Tim Tebow style. Finding that tight end that I was talking about, Josh Whyle. And I looked at Josh Whyle in the NFL draft, man. Titans picked him up in the fifth round out of Cincinnati. I thought it was an underrated pick at the time. And I'm telling you, I like what I see out of this kid. Not just his pass catching, his blocking has been really good. A lot of two tight end sets with Okonkwo. I've seen him throwing a lot of lead blocks for Derrick Henry or Tajay Spears. And obviously he caught a couple huge passes there, including the touchdown from Derrick Henry there in that football game last Sunday. I really like how this kid looks. I really do. And I think the Titans are a better team because of it. Looking forward to see how he grows and progresses in the future. I'm really looking forward to that. So again, a huge win for the Titans, 27-3 over the Bengals. And yeah, we'll see if they can continue that good fortune, man. Around the rest of the AFC South, it's been a mixed bag. You look at the Colts; they go down to the Rams. They go down 23-0 in that football game. They come all the way back, tie the game at 23. Ball game goes to overtime, and then Matthew Stafford felt like, okay, man, stop playing around, these boys. It's going down the field. Me and Puka Nacuya, I think that's how you say his name. I may not have said it right, but you know who I'm talking about. Number 17. The Rams go down. They get the touchdown. They win it in overtime, 29-23. Again, I was shocked that the Rams got out the way they did, but I was not shocked that the Rams ended up winning the game. I mentioned it last week. I like this Rams offense. Defensively, they play well early, but then Anthony Richardson, they were able to come up with a couple of drives when they had to. You go back, that's kind of what it was. I mean, not the greatest stats from Anthony Richardson. I've seen a lot of people kind of talking down on him the last few days, and I'm just like, I don't understand it. People saying, oh, he's showing that he's going to be a bust, and the Colts were stupid for drafting him, and I've seen nothing like that. I think the dude has looked pretty damn good, in my opinion. That's just me. I mean, you look at his stats, 11 for 25. A lot of people are pointing out his passing percentage. Look, man, I understand all that, but that's not where everything is with your quarterback, in my opinion. He did not throw a pick. He had 200 yards passing. He had 2 touchdowns. Look, this dude, we know he's a work in progress. Indianapolis Colts fans know he's a work in progress. So, I'm trying to find out where, I'm trying to see where the issue is. I don't get it. As a rookie quarterback, he's doing better than Carolina Panthers are doing with Bryce Young. I mean, I hate to say that as an Alabama fan, but it's the truth. They're doing just as good as C.J. Stroud. Everybody's going on and on and on about C.J. Stroud, and deservedly so. But still got the same record. So, yeah, man, look, man, I don't think there's much to worry about with the Colts. I think you're looking good as far as I'm concerned. And now you're getting Jordan Taylor back. How about that? Jonathan Taylor. I get those J's mixed up some kind of way sometimes. Jonathan Taylor's coming back. So now all of a sudden the running back room looks pretty good. Not sure if how long he's going to stay. I mean, if you're a Colts fan, obviously you want him to stay for the long haul, I would assume. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, man. Yeah. Colts looking pretty good, even though they did lose that game this past Sunday. So they've lost twice at home. That's not good. One of those games in the division to Jacksonville. Speaking of Jacksonville, they beat the Falcons 23-7 in that game across the pond. Doing enough. The Falcons right now struggling big time offensively. Desmond Ridder, not a great game. And the Jaguars were able to slow down Bijan Robinson to a degree. You know, he had a couple of nice runs, made a couple big plays, but for the most part, I think not what we have been accustomed to seeing here this early on from Bijan Robinson. He did have 100 yards, but it just didn't seem like to me that it was as impactful as the first couple of games there in Atlanta. This is my opinion on that. Did not score a touchdown, but yeah, again, that's not a bad game by any stretch of the imagination or anything like that. The Falcons did have 95 yards on 6 receptions from Jonnu Smith, but Desmond Ridder's got to be a lot better than 19 of 31, 191 yards, a touchdown, and 2 interceptions, because I think that he is going to be the key for maybe opening up Bijan Robinson a little bit more. So we'll see how it goes, but Drake London caught the long touchdown pass there for the Falcons. Again, Duval, they're happy right now. They get back to 2-2 like everyone else is in the AFC South, including the Houston Texans, who, man, came away with a humongous victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers. And obviously that's where I'm going with my NFL baller of the week, C.J. Stroud. I mean, this dude is looking the part, man. And I don't get people that thought that he was not going to be a good NFL quarterback. I just don't get it. He's making people look stupid, and he's found himself another guy. I talked about Dell last week, but now Nico Collins as well. That's a name that I did not bring up last week. He had 7 receptions, 168 yards, 2 touchdowns in that game. That game was not even close. Stat-wise, scoreboard-wise, eyeball-wise, 451 total yards from the Texans, 225 from the Pittsburgh Steelers. Crazy. 24 first downs from the Texans, 12 for the Steelers. Texans look good, man. Can they sustain it? We'll see, but guess what? Even if they don't, I don't think we're going to see a disastrous 4 game. It's not like they're just going to sit there and win 2 more games the rest of the season and go 4-13. I think this team, at worst, is going to win maybe 6 games or maybe 7 games now. Maybe, I think at best, who knows? This team could win the doggone division. I don't think that's going to happen, obviously. But who's to say it won't? Really good performance by the Texans, man. You have to be impressed. And, man, my man DeMeco Ryans, two games in a row that he has won his first two victories as a head coach in the National Football League. Congrats. Major congrats to him. And then, man, talk really briefly about the Panthers, man. This thing is really looking kind of bad there. I mean, I really hate it because Bryce Young is kind of slap dab in the middle of it. Don't get me wrong. Part of it, to me, has been his fault. Obviously, he's the quarterback. He's got to be better. I understand he's a rookie, but he's got to be better at certain times if this offense is going to look better than it does right now. But I think it also goes back to play calling. They have not opened up the offense for Bryce Young, in my opinion. Everything's dink and dunk. Find Adam Thielen. You know, so they need another big time. They need a big time receiver there in Carolina, but I don't think that's the entire problem. I think there are a lot of problems. I think you still have some offensive line problems, but I still think you have issues with Bryce. There were a couple instances where I think he did not really feel the pressure coming off the end. And that is something he has got to get better at. He didn't recognize it quick enough. And I think all of that is you know, kind of a rhythm thing to me. I mean, when you're kind of off base, you're kind of off rhythm. You know, when you do get time to throw the football, you're kind of off rhythm there. Everything is off rhythm, maybe with the offensive line. All of those things, you kind of get off rhythm. And so you sit there and maybe you don't recognize that blitz coming. Because we know Bryce Young is, again, he's at the NFL level now, but we know that Bryce Young is good at recognizing those blitzes coming. We've seen him do it too many times when he was at the University of Alabama. Now, he's at a different level, so he's going to get better, and he's going to look a lot better, I think, really quickly. But the fans are getting restless there in Carolina right now. So we'll see how that goes. Huge win for the Vikings. They get their first win of the year, 21-13, but not very impressive necessarily beating Carolina the way they are right now. And then I don't know what to say about the New Orleans Saints right now. I really don't. I was pretty big on Derek Carr. I'm gonna be honest with you on that. But it wasn't like I was sitting there thinking, oh, Derek Carr is gonna win the MVP. He's gonna be Drew Brees back in the Super Bowl year, 2010, 2009, back in that era of New Orleans Saints football where Drew Brees was maybe the best quarterback in the league. I'm trying to sit here and say Derek Carr was going to be that level. But I thought he'd be better than what he's been so far. And he has not been. They did get Alvin Kamara back. But this offense is in neutral, to say the least. They lose 26-9 to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tampa Bay goes 3-1. They now lead the NFC South, which is insane. But when you sit there and you kind of look at the rest of the NFC South, you kind of understand it. The Falcons trying to figure out what's going on with Desmond Ridder. You got the Saints, really good defense, but they're trying to figure out what's going on offensively. And then obviously you have what's going on in Carolina where they have yet to win a football game. So Tampa Bay is leading this division, but I don't know, man. Really, really crazy stuff going on in the NFC South. We'll see how all this plays out as we go forward. Interesting stuff. Again, the formula for these teams in the NFC South to win this division is really just probably going to come down to who has the better quarterback play. And guess what? Right now, Baker Mayfield is the better quarterback. He's the better quarterback right now. But like I say, it's not like he has a lot of great competition right now either. So we'll see. But then again, you sit there and you look at it. Who has better weapons than he has? Or at least a better number one weapon than he has in Mike Evans. At least he has that. I mean, Atlanta has a couple candidates. Pitts, London, you know, Bijan Robinson from his running back position. But where's we're going to see that consistency from either one of those guys? Carolina does not have a guy, and I don't know what's going on in New Orleans. So we'll see how the thing plays out. We'll see if Tampa Bay can carry this thing out in some kind of way, win the NFC South. That would be crazy. Anyway, man, that is my NFL talk. Again, CJ Stroud is my baller of the week. Had to put it down for him. Incredible game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Texans are going to be a really good watch the rest of the season, I do believe. Even if they go into a time where they lose some games here, I still think they're going to be very competitive and are going to be a good watch each and every Sunday. Anyway, man, we're going to take another quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to close out the show. We're going to talk just a little bit NBA. A couple things I definitely want to get into concerning a couple teams down in this neck of the woods. And then I'll give you my picks for week 6 in college football, week 5 in the NFL. We'll do all of that, man. On the other side, you're listening to Ball About the South with C. Wood. All right, man, we're back in for a few more minutes here on Ball About the South with Seawood. We'll close the show out with this segment. Promised you a little bit of NBA. And we had Media Day, I think it was Monday or Tuesday. I think probably was Monday, I guess. All the teams there in the NBA had players, coaches, and all of that talking about the upcoming season and all of that. And I just have a couple sound bites. Obviously, a lot of attention this season is going to go on Zion Williamson as he comes back, as he gets back into the lineup there for the New Orleans Pelicans. How is that going to look? What can we look forward to from Zion? What can we look forward to from this team as a whole? With him back in the lineup, couple questions toward him. Here's one. This is a soundbite from him at Media Day.
Priority number one. I feel great. But priority number one was to get better for my teammates, get better for the city, and do my part in trying to make this a winning franchise. Two, what I worked on, a lot, stuff to not only make the game easier on myself, but to pretty much make myself unguardable, like really, really unguardable, like no matter what night it is, well, I'm making it look easy.
Unguardable. That's what Zion says. Zion Williamson, power forward for the New Orleans Pelicans, says he wants to make himself unguardable. He says he put a lot into the offseason. He mentioned wanting to be the best for his team and the best for his city. A lot of good words in that piece there, in that snippet. But will Zion Williamson live up to those words? I mean, I'm not saying that he won't or anything like that, but it's just his injury situations so far have kept him from being that. So we'll see what happens. Again, I think if you're a Pelicans fan, you got to be very excited to hear that he's coming back. But you also have to sit there and think, oh, man, you know, you're in the back of your mind sitting there thinking about his injuries and will he get injured this season going forward, and how durable will he be for the rest of his career and all of that. So very interesting what is going on with New Orleans Pelicans as they get ready for the 2023-24 season, as every other team does. They're in the Southwest Division, and I think if you look at the Southwest Division, it could probably be their division for the taking. Memphis, to me, is going to be, I think this 25-game suspension for Ja Morant has been overblown a little bit. I think they'll be good enough where they'll be able to compete while he's gone. I know they lost Tyus Jones, who's the ultimate backup point guard. I get all of that, but I think they have enough where it should not be a disaster while Ja Morant is out. And then if he can pick up where he left off, they should be okay. Well, obviously, that might hurt them in, like, winning the division. But especially if New Orleans has their things going for them, or maybe a Dallas gets their thing together. But making the playoffs, things of that nature, I think the Grizzlies should be fine. So I think this division could be New Orleans for the taking, though. I think they are the best team in this division right now, at least starting the season while Ja Morant is serving that 25-game suspension. That's just my thoughts. We'll see if they take advantage of it. Another soundbite. As we go to the Southeast Division really quick, Jimmy Butler, man. Jimmy Butler and his hair. Here's a soundbite of him talking about just that.
Jimmy, last year you came out with the braids, man. What's this?
I had dreads last year.
Yeah, the dreads.
What's this?
Yeah.
This is my emotional state. I'm one with my emotions. So, this is what you get.
Yeah.
Okay, first Jimmy had to correct the media member there that asked the question. He had to correct him, saying, look, it wasn't braids that I had, it was dreads. I don't know what you call this hairstyle that Jimmy Butler is rocking right now, here as we get ready for the season to begin and all that. Will he keep that hairstyle? I'm not really sure either. But he calls that his emotional state, if you heard there in the clip. Very interesting, to say the least. Very interesting. But other questions that were asked of him, he still has his, you know, Jimmy Butler has confidence that I don't know if any other player in the NBA has, or at least they don't show it. They don't say it like Jimmy Butler says it. If they do, Jimmy Butler thinks that they're going to win the NBA title. And you know what? That's the way you're supposed to feel. That's the way you're supposed to feel. I don't think this team's obviously good enough to win the NBA title right now. And I think you sit there, obviously he was asked the question about players playing next to him. And you sit there and you think about Dame Lillard. Dame going to the Milwaukee Bucks, who obviously would be one of the teams that Miami would have to jump over to get to an NBA Finals again this season, to get to a second consecutive NBA Finals. Obviously, they would have to climb that hurdle. And obviously, Dame being a Milwaukee Buck now would make that climb a lot tougher. And so he still has his confidence in the players that are playing next to him, which is what he is supposed to say, which is how he is supposed to feel. But, man, you just sit there and think about Miami not picking up Dame Lillard. And he was, from what I've been seeing, he was there for the taking for them. They did not want to give up certain pieces of that team, and I get that to a degree, but I don't know, man. We'll see how it goes. I mean, it has been really a head-scratcher, player after player that, big name after big name that Miami has said to have been interested in, and they've really gotten none of those players here in the last couple seasons. But guess what? they were one of only two teams left standing in the NBA Finals last season, so maybe they know what they're doing a lot more than we do. That's all I can say. We'll see how this thing goes for them. Obviously, in the Southeast Division, you have to still favor them They still have Bam Adebayo, who's one of the biggest, best big men in the game, in my opinion. They do get Tyler Hero back, which would be huge. We'll see if there's any kind of residual effect from him, knowing that they were actively trying to trade him. We'll see how that goes. I think he'll be fine. So, yeah, I still would say Miami are the favorites to win the Southeast Division. We'll talk a lot more about the NBA here in future episodes as we get close to tip-off of the season. But I just kind of wanted to run a couple sound bites just to kind of whet your appetite just a little bit as we get ready for everybody's in training camp right now. We'll be getting ready for preseason games here beginning this weekend. I think Dallas Mavericks and Minnesota Timberwolves played somewhere overseas today. Actually, it was today. And we're just a little bit away from getting everything started. The other trade that went down that was kind of a really connected to that Dame trade. It's not part of the Dame trade, but you sit there and you look at this. You're talking about some teams playing chess, not checkers. You sit there and you look at Milwaukee going out to get Dame. What does Boston do? They go out and get Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday is one of the best defensive players, especially on the perimeter in this game right now. They go out and get him to team him up with Tatum and Brown. The only part that they give up Robert Williams on the interior. So now they give up really their main rebounder, their main rim protector to get Drew Holiday. So I think they get better defensively on the perimeter, but they get worse under the rim. And it's not like they were necessarily good under the rim. Robert Williams, like I said, was pretty much it. I do think Kristaps Porzingis is a pretty good shot blocker, but he's not a guy that's going to just bang around and really go out and dominate the boards and things of that nature. Really interesting trade. I like it from a point of view that the Celtics go out and get a guy that can go out and defend the perimeter, that can go out and get Dame. I think it was a really good answer for that. We'll just have to see what they come up with to replace Robert Williams. They did pick up Wenyen Gabriel, former Kentucky player, former L.A. Laker. So that is a guy I'm assuming will get a lot of run there in their front court. Still, he is not Robert Williams from what I've seen. We'll have to see how that goes. Big time trade there as well. Anyway, man, yeah, so like I said, we're going to get a lot of NBA talk in here in the future. But right now we're talking football, and it's time for some picks. College football week 6, NFL week 5. Let's do it. All right, yes, sir. Let's get into it, man. Let's look at some games here in the NFL on Sunday. Big time games going on. I guess you could say. Let's look at this New Orleans Saints game there as they visit Foxborough. They go up to play the New England Patriots. And this is, I tell you, look at this football game, man. It's a pick'em for a reason. I'm sitting there looking at the line right now. It's a pick'em. Both these teams have had major issues offensively. I think both defenses are pretty good. I think the Saints are a little bit better than the Patriots overall. Really intriguing matchup. And this game, obviously, is very important for both these teams. I think the Patriots are done pretty much already, in my opinion. I don't see them being able to come back from this in the division that they're in. I mean, they're in the division with two of the best teams in football. It's going to be tough for them to do it. And would you believe, I just refreshed this page right here. And I promise you, just in that time, the Patriots went to a 1-point favorite. So I'm sure that line is going to be going back and forth. I like the Saints in this game to a degree, but I don't know. This game was a pick'em for a reason. Can the Saints get Alvin Kamara back into a role where he's really the leader, you know, kind of the go-to guy on this football team? Obviously, Chris Olave. But, I mean, that takes Derek Carr to have a really big game to get Chris Olave going. I would love for him to do it because Chris Olave is one of my fantasy teams. Olave's been decent at best so far. I'd like for him to explode, to be honest with you. But then on the flip side of that, in this football game in particular, I would like for Mac Jones to come back from a really bad outing last week against the Dallas Cowboys. Look, man, I think when you sit there and look at the New England Patriots, I have to keep it real. I think there are a lot of things that the Patriots have, you know, a lot of things about the Patriots that make Mac Jones' job a lot harder than some people may think that it is. I mean, the lack of weapons is an issue. I mean, come on. But Mac Jones is a big part of the issue as well. I mean, that pick six that he threw last Sunday against the Cowboys was just ridiculous. I mean, you just cannot make that pass. You just can't. So it's hard to sit here and back him up and say, well, you know what, the Patriots really just aren't that good around him. Yeah, but Mac Jones, you can't throw that pass, dude. All the way cross field like that? You can't do that. So it's a lot of things going on with the lack of offense for both of these teams, in my opinion. I don't think it's just Derek Carr for the Saints. I think there are a lot of things that we saw from last season that went on with this Saints squad where they couldn't score, where they couldn't move the ball, where they depended on the defense way too much. And it's leaked into this season as well. I'm going to go with the Patriots in this game. I could go either way. I who knows? I could flip a coin. And whatever way it goes, I would pick the winner of that game. I'll go with the Patriots in this game. Just simple fact that they're at home. But this is a big game for the Saints if they want to continue to stay in that race there in the NFC South. We'll see how it goes. But I do think the Patriots will have an uphill battle there in the AFC. So it's really not a thing where I think they're going to be able to recover from that. Anyway, so I got the Patriots winning that game. Let's look at this Carolina Panthers at Detroit Lions game. First of all, the first piece of news in this game, I have to mention Jameson Williams, wide receiver from the University of Alabama, who was suspended for gambling. He was suspended 6 games. He's back after 4 games. They cut the suspension length down to 4 games from 6, so he is eligible to be back this week. And he will be apparently in the lineup against the Carolina Panthers this coming Sunday. They're at Ford Field. The Lions come in a 9.5-point favorite in that football game. That's a lot of points. But I tell you what, the Panthers have been that bad offensively so far. We talked about them earlier in the show. I like the Lions, man. I like the Lions to win this game. And I think they cover that 9.5. I think they win this game by 10 to 13 points, somewhere in that range. Probably something like 27-14, 30-16, or something like that. I like the Lions in this football game. I think the Lions are an absolute threat to anyone else, and you name it, in the NFC. I think this is a team that could beat anybody. I think you have to look at the 49ers being the best team in football right now. They're definitely the best in the NFC. And you have that Sunday night game coming up between the 49ers and the Cowboys, which is going to be, should be must-see TV. We'll see. But I really like this Lions squad on both sides of the football thing. That Goff is really playing well at quarterback. They've had Robert Montgomery. They've had, he had a little injury issue last week, I think it was. Jahmyr Gibbs is kind of backing him up. I like every phase of the game, and of course, Amon Ross is just big time wide receiver. I think the Lions, and I think Jameson Williams could even help them a lot more, being a guy that can really take the top off the defense. I like this Lions team to go a long way in the playoffs, and I definitely have them beating the Carolina Panthers this coming weekend. Let's look at the Houston Texans at the Falcons. Falcons coming to this game 1.5-point favorite. They're coming back from across the pond. Really intriguing football game right here. You got Desmond Ridder, who has been struggling the last couple of weeks. Falcons have lost their last couple of games. The Texans are going the opposite direction. They have played very well the last couple of weeks. They've won their two games here. You have C.J. Stroud, player of the week. All of that at Mercedes-Benz Stadium this coming Sunday. Very, very intriguing game. Again, the Falcons come in 1.5-point favorites. This is a tough one to go with, man. It's a tough one to pick. I wonder how the jet lag and all of that affects a team coming back from across the pond. Obviously, I would probably go with the Falcons just from the simple fact that they are at home. I'll do that, but it would not shock me at all if the Texans come in and win that game. I'll go with the Falcons, though, and give me the 1.5 points with them on that. Where should we go next? The Dolphins hosting the Giants. The Dolphins coming to that game a 12-point favorite there at home. I like the Dolphins in that game. And there's talk that they're about to add Chase Claypool to the mix. I guess they're tired of the short wide receivers there in Miami. They decided to go with a little height, someone with a little bit of physicality. Claypool has struggled, though, just really making kind of the basic plays or whatever. But maybe not a bad pickup for the Dolphins. I think you can always use a guy that has some size that, you know, around the goal line, you know, short yardage situations, things of that nature, things that maybe Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle may not be as good at. Chase Claypool could kind of fill in that gap a little bit. So maybe not a bad move for the Dolphins. I think I like them by and the 12 points. We'll see if Saquon Barkley comes back for the Giants in that game this week. Let's look at the game of the week, I would say, in the AFC South, between two AFC South teams, that is, because it's the only one in between two AFC South teams. That is the Tennessee Titans traveling to Indianapolis, and the Titans come in a 2.5-point favorite. I'm not really sure why. I guess experience, I guess going on what's supposed to have happened coming into the season. You know, you're talking about a rookie quarterback in Anthony Richardson. You're talking about a veteran in Ryan Tannehill, even though he's been up and down this season. So I guess that's why you make the Titans a 2.5-point favorite in this football game. Again, another intriguing football game. The Colts have struggled in the last couple games in the first half, seemingly. They were able to get things going against Baltimore in the second half, and they rolled that to an overtime victory. They were not able to get the victory last week, even though they went to overtime again. The Rams got the ball first, and that was pretty much it. We'll see how it goes. The Titans have not played well at all. They've only scored 18 points in their two road games so far. I like the Colts in this football game. We'll see. It's really hard to predict what Titans team is going to show up. If the Titans team that played Sunday, particularly in the second quarter, if they show up at Lucas Oil Stadium, then I think the Titans walk out of there with a win. But so far, that team has only shown up in a couple quarters this season, even in their home game. They've been nowhere near. They haven't even been in the city that they've been playing in in their road games. So I like the Colts definitely to cover that 2.5 that they're picking up right now. And for the game of the week, at least teams here in the AFC or NFC South, the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Buffalo Bills. The Jaguars, maybe they got their mojo back last week, but this is a tough matchup against the Bills. They're across the pond again. Bills come in 5.5-point favorite. Give me Buffalo, man. I like the Bills in this game. I think they win that game by a touchdown. They're in the early game Sunday morning. They're across the pond. Yeah. Should be a good game, though. Let's go to college, man. Let's look at a few games really quick, man. We'll start off. We'll start off with a non-SEC game, which will be an SEC game next season. It is the Red River Shootout, the Red River Rivalry, whatever you want to call it. Oklahoma, Texas. It goes down tomorrow on Saturday at 11 a.m. Central Time. The Sooners come in undefeated. The Longhorns come in likewise. Give me the Texas Longhorns. They come in a 5.5-point favorite, but you just never can tell in this game. You never can tell, and I've been so far a little bit, you know, pleasantly. Well, maybe not pleasantly because I'm not an Oklahoma fan, but you know, I've been a little bit surprised in what I've seen from the Sooners so far. I'm just not really big on Brent Venables. It's not that I don't think Brent Venables is a good coach. It's obviously, definitely, not because he's not a good defensive coach. I've always thought he was a good defensive coordinator and all of that. I'm just not really certain that he's the guy that's going to be, you know, that's going to be the best for Oklahoma here for the next, 10 years or something like that. I just don't see that being the case, but I could be wrong. So they have been, to me, in a little bit of surprise. Not to say that it's surprising that they're undefeated, but they've been pretty impressive. We'll see how they handle this thing against Texas on Saturday. I like the Horns, but it would not surprise me if the Sooners come in under that 5.5. We'll see how it goes. Let's get into the SEC, though, man. Let's get into the SEC. And let's go with that game in Como, Columbia, Missouri. The Tigers versus Tigers. LSU at Missouri, man. LSU, the Bayou Bengals, come in 5.5-point favorites. That right there, look, I'm going with Mizzou. I think we're talking about another really tight game. And I could be wrong. I mean, I really like what I've seen out of this Missouri team. Would not surprise me at all if LSU wins this game by a couple scores or something like that. Would not shock me at all. But I think Missouri is prime right now, man. I think that place is going to be rocking. And there's obviously some issues with this LSU defense. We'll see if they can get them fixed. But even if LSU wins the game, I think it's going to be a really tight contest. It's going to come right down to the wire again, last minute of the game. I at least like Missouri to cover the 5.5 points that they're getting right now, even if LSU wins the football game. Texas A&M hosting the Alabama Crimson Tide. Doesn't get much better than that. The Tide, this thing has been kind of fluctuating as well. I think it started out at around 2.5 that Alabama was favored by going into College Station. It's been, went down to a point there. Would not be surprised if it slipped down to a point. I wouldn't be shocked if it went to a pick'em before game time. Really, really intriguing football game, to say the least. It's intriguing, obviously, because this is the game right now. Whoever wins this game on Saturday is pretty much taking control, or will take control, of the SEC West. They will be looked at as the favorite to win the conference. I mean, to win the West and get to Atlanta. So that's how big this game is. Obviously, that this game has turned into a rivalry. I still think when you're looking at it from an Alabama perspective, it still pales in comparison to Auburn, obviously. It pales in comparison to Tennessee and LSU. Those are right now will always be the top three rivalries for Alabama, but A&M is climbing up there. I think A&M is probably that next game that Alabama fans like to see the Alabama play in. Very interesting game. It's going to be, again, I think this game is going to come down to how Alabama's offensive line is able to combat the defensive line for Texas A&M. I think that is your game. I just really do. There are other aspects, obviously. Obviously, you got the line of scrimmage on the other side. I think Alabama's defensive line, their linebackers, their front seven is really improved this season. I think they'll do well against A&M on Saturday. But to me, the game is going to come down to this battle, because obviously, if Alabama's offensive line is able to hold up and they're able to run the ball, then it's gonna have, you know, Jalen Milroe able to be in a comfort level, a much more comfortable level than he probably normally would be playing in front of 100,000 people like he's going to do on Saturday afternoon. Really interesting game, man. But some tells me Alabama pulls this thing out, and I just maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm looking through my crimson colored glasses, because I can tell you. I can come up with just as many reasons why I would say A&M wins this game as well. Again, you look at the line, 2-point game right now. It's a 2-point line. I can see it going either way, but give me Alabama. I think they cover those 2 points. I think this game probably very similar to last season in Tuscaloosa, which was 24-20. I think a very similar score this time around as well. I've got Alabama winning the game 27-24 against the Texas A&M Aggies on this coming Saturday. Really interesting game. And for the game of the weekend in the SEC, you got to go to the SEC East, man. Kentucky going to Georgia. That game right now, a 6 p.m. game. Dogs come in 14.5-point favorite. I like the Dogs to win the game, but give me the Wildcats, man. Give me the Wildcats getting 14.5 there between the hedges. I think you're talking about a tight game. I really do, but I think some kind of way, somehow, Georgia pulls it out there in the end and remain undefeated there in the SEC. Yeah, man. So, yeah, it's going to be a really good weekend of football, I believe. Definitely looking forward to it. Obviously, got the baseball playoffs going on. And please do not forget the WNBA playoffs. WNBA finals start on Sunday as well. Looking forward to that. Anyway, man, please remember to like, subscribe, do all those things. Follow me at C Wood on Sports on X, IG, Threads, all of that. Be right back here next week, man, for more Ball About the South. Peace out.